the sun is shining and all of my favorite plant friends are popping up right now. Speaking of plants, what are you growing this year? Do you know? Do you know what kind of medicine will be in your garden? Or are you still trying to figure it out? Totally okay if you're still trying to figure it out. We're all growing and learning on this journey, right? But if you want some help, I do have a family medicine garden guide. It's basically 10 essential herbs that I feel like every mom needs to know and grow in their yard. I give you some growing tips and ways that you can use it as medicine, and it's totally free. So if you want that, I'm going to pop a link in the show notes here for you to grab it and get your hands digging in the dirt and growing incredible medicine for you and your family. This next episode of The Herbalist Path was such a complete honor and joy to be able to record. I got to interview one of my very first official herb teachers, Scott Close, and he is just a really beautiful being who taught me a lot about connecting with the plants and the earth and how to make really, really good herbal medicine with the plants, and about the importance of the relationships of the plants, and yeah, just a really deep connection. And he even shares a song with us in this episode. So it was really, really nice. It left me really excited to go out in the field and learn more with Scott. And I hope that you guys enjoy the episode as much as I did.
Welcome to The Herbalist's Path, where we're on a mission to inspire a movement where there's an herbalist in every home, again, with your host, clinical herbalist, Melissa Muttersbaugh.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Herbalist Path. I am very, very excited and really honored to have today's guest on. He's one of my very first herbal teachers when I finally decided that I was indeed going to dive even deeper beyond the books and online courses I had done in studying herbalism. And he is a really wonderful plant spirit teacher who does an amazing job at allowing people and plants to connect together energetically. He's also the author of one of my favorite books. It's Pacific Northwest Medicinal Plants, where it says to identify, harvest, and use 120 wild herbs for health and wellness. He's who taught me how to recognize a lot of the plants in my area, how to know when the best time to harvest them is, and how to make great medicine with them. And he has done so much more than that. So Scott Close, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's my absolute pleasure. There's almost nothing more in life that brings me joy than seeing someone who's been a student just take flight with, you know, whatever. And I don't take credit for any of it, but just like giving the kind of like little tidbits that inspire, and seeing people take that and just run with it and become their own brand of herbalist, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful thing. And like chatting with you right now, I have nice chills in my body of energy and love, and it's really wonderful. And I also have been teaching about herbalism and in my own way, you know, I can't do it the way that you do it. And I hear these great things from people too. And it is beautiful. And I remember being one of your students, how you were like, you need to take these messages and spread them out wide. And like this podcast, for instance, my mission is to inspire a movement where there's an herbalist in every home, again, because that's one of the ways that I think we can come together and do some major protecting and healing of this precious planet that we have. And I was taking some time to look over your website last night, and it's really exciting to see some of the offers you have for students, and of course the information that you have on there and how connected it is to the relationship with this earth and the planets and plants. And I would love to hear you just talk about that for a moment.
Great. Yeah, it's funny. When I woke up this morning, I thought, what am I going to talk about on the podcast? see what wants to come, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, the first things that came was this idea of transitioning from a transactional mm-hmm. way of being to a more relational way of being, and how important that is in all aspects of our lives. And it's something that as herbalists or plant people, we can practice on a very, you know, concrete basis of, are we going to go out and harvest plants? And we're going to think about it, you know, in the kind of extreme level, it's like, oh, there's plants out there that I can make money from. And if I get X amount, I can get X amount. And for me, I would question the healing capacity of plants that are harvested in that way. Mm-hmm. But if we do it in a relational way, which is the way that I teach people how to do and how I practice myself, it extends into every aspect of our lives and every aspect of the community of life of where the plant is growing. Mm-hmm. And so we have to like kind of really learn how to listen and tune in with what's happening there. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, if I'm going to go harvest plants, I'm opening myself to the place and to the plants, hearing, listening, also giving my gratitude for all that I've learned from that plant, and imagining all the people that can be helped by the medicine of this plant in ways that I can't even fathom sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like, as the herbalist, I become the, we're really, really going deep right off the bat here.
I love it. I love it. I knew that would happen.
I'm the, you know, like the kind of like this vector point for this kind of like funnel of informational flow that's coming from the environment, and then bringing that forth into the community of people. And there's a whole different medicine that's involved when it's done that way. And I mean, I just see it all the time when I'm working with people, in that the type of healing that happens on such deep and fundamental levels of literally like changing how we interact with the world and interact, you know, with our own selves, where it all kind of starts on some level.
That is so true and so very powerful. And it takes me back to some of the journeys I was fortunate to be able to go on with you that were incredibly healing, and the tears just began to flow when I had some experiences with various plants. Yerba Mansa comes to mind very, very strongly for me on a wildcrafting journey with you, amongst Yerba many Santa. Others. Did I say Mansa? Sorry, Santa. Sorry. Yes, the holy herb. And it was a very spiritual, it still is a very, very spiritual plant for me. And I still have the medicine that I harvested on that trip mm-hmm. almost 8 years ago. And when I take the time to sit with that medicine and it takes me back to that point, it mm-hmm. it is really powerful. It is really, really beautiful. And it is so incredibly healing on such a deeper basis than the old take this for that. Exactly. Or as you're saying, the go harvest this for this much of money. Yeah, it's really, really powerful. And I think that having that connection really deepens the importance in knowing how important it is to use these plants in a way that makes them feel loved and well used. Yeah. So they want to continue to give back and then to give back to those plants.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite things to do. You know, yes. I'm very fortunate today to live in a very luscious and fertile ground where I get to spend a lot of time with various plants. So many of the times if I go harvest something, I've been hanging out with that plant for years before I even think to harvest it. So
yeah.
I know that you speak a lot about that deep relationship in harvesting with plants and not just showing up and saying, okay, I'm going to harvest now.
Right. Yeah. Right. The what's that plant good for mentality. Yes. That, you know, is understandable that people come with that. I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with that question, because people are coming from, you know, training through a cultural milieu for their whole lives.
Yeah.
But what if we enter into a relationship with the plant and say, how can I be transformed by developing a relationship with you? How can I learn from you? Then that opens up a whole different realm. And especially with the, I work mostly with the wild plants. Mm-hmm. And reason, I mean, I first did that because I was tired of, I would start a garden in a rental house and then have to move. And I'd start another garden. After doing that like four or five times, I realized, wait a second, I have gardens in the wild, you know, so right. these places that I've been going for years and I tend to them. And, you know, like you said, that deep listening for years of just going back to a place and really knowing the place and knowing the plants. So that those became my gardens. And somebody asked me the other day, what have you learned? What's like the big teaching you've gotten so far, like during this time of COVID and all of this upheaval and all of this change? And I was not quite in the right frame of being to answer that to them. Mm-hmm. It was just, I was talking to somebody on the phone, but I thought about it afterwards. And the thing that came, I think the most important thing I've learned during this time where there's been a little bit more spaciousness for me in some ways. I mean, I also have like children, so there's been less spaciousness in that way, but, but to be, have just a little more quietude around stuff is that I've been noticing that these wild parts of myself that have been repressed through my upbringing for most of my life. I mean, they have a chance to come out, but there's some of these parts that are just, they retracted against the domestication and the civilization of this society we live in. They just couldn't function in that. And those parts are these parts that for years I've been just sort of struggling with trying to understand why they're bothering me with their pains or their tiredness or just sort of like nagging for attention. And in opening to them, and I'm tying this in with like my work with wild plants, because the wild plants help us see the wild parts of ourselves more. They help illuminate those parts because they have their own wildness that's different than a plant that's grown and raised in a garden by us. Mm-hmm. What I found is that I had this moment where I was like, oh, I'm welcoming these parts of myself home. This is so nice. How nice of me, you know? And then as that process was taking place, I had this like realization of like, wait a second. Oh, they're here to welcome me home. Mm. They're bringing me home to my wildness. Mm. And they're the most sensitive little, you know, some of them are fierce warrior-like aspects. Those are the parts that have come out more easily over the years, but these ones that are so sensitive and so delicate that they just can't live in like this technology industrial dominated society, but giving them the space to come out and be like, ah, what I love about that is that these parts of myself that have been marginalized by society and by myself, right, that I just sort of like pushed aside, and I would, you know, maybe spend years trying to like, oh, let me like bring them to some sort of healing and in some sort of, you know, place of peace. But instead of just that, there's this whole other level where now they're like, oh, okay, well, we're actually like the part that's going to help you get through these times of transition into this new configuration, whatever, you know, none of us knows what that's going to look like, but clearly things are huge shifting things in this country and in the world and everywhere.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I love hearing that because it's so powerful. I have also become through this time that has been so challenging for many, I have really been working a lot on getting in touch with me. You know, the inner me. I spent a few years really deeply suppressing me and why I do the things that I do. And that is really a disservice to not only myself, but to the world. You know, I mean, not that the world listens to me or anything, but I have a lot of love to offer. And I think that love is needed in our world today. And yeah, taking that time to let those little pieces of your own being come out. Now is a great time for it as we go through this collective change.
Yes.
That's how we can help decide how we're going to move this world forward in a better way. Yes. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's really nice.
I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
Medicinal mushrooms are all the rage these days, if you didn't know already. And with great reason, because they are powerful medicine that can improve your health and your life in so many different ways, when they're well made. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of stuff on the market that isn't going to be so effective. And that's why you need to find a brand that you can actually trust. For me, that brand is Whole Sun Wellness, and this is the creation of a brilliant woman and fellow mama, Jamie Bonfiglio. She's an international mushroom educator that has been working in the medicinal mushroom industry for years. And this is when she saw firsthand how many other companies take shortcuts when it comes to their products. And Jamie wasn't having it. She set out to build her company the right way. Whole Sun Wellness is here to raise the industry standards so those crap mushrooms on the market aren't getting into your body or your family's body. Whole Sun Wellness is the first company to test and report nutritional facts for all of their extracts. They go beyond industry standards every step of the way, from sourcing to extraction and final testing. And as the owners of the largest medicinal mushroom farm in the United States, Whole Sun Wellness is taking control of their supply chain for the highest quality and absolute full transparency. They're even the first company to include pure mycelium extract in every single product. So when you're thinking of getting medicinal mushrooms for you and your family, Whole Sun Wellness is exactly the ones you want. Also, be sure to check out their new Mycolites. These are the world's first dissolvable electrolyte tablets. They're featuring functional mushroom extracts that'll give you more energy, more stamina, and recovery as well. And who couldn't use all of that? The other thing is, they are these adorable little mushroom-shaped tablets, and they come in like a little Altoids box, but way cooler than Altoids, because they're Mycolites. Anyways, head to wholesunwellness.com to grab yourself some Mycolites and all of the other functional medicinal mushrooms that you and your family need. And of course, you can grab that link right here in the show notes now.
Yeah. And there's, even if we think, oh, I have nothing to offer, I'm just this little tiny person, everybody has their place. Just spend any time in a forest, quiet your mind, relax, look around. You'll see that all of the beings in the forest have organized themselves in ways that support each other. Mm-hmm. Even though sometimes it seems like things are attacking other things, but there's also this understanding of the death that creates life.
Right.
And what I've tuned into in the last few years is this way of being that creates death from which no life can actually spring. And that's sort of like the dominant culture that we live in. It's creating these processes of death that don't allow for new life, but in the relationship of community, those deaths give the opportunity for new life. And so like shifting that whole thing over and really just, yeah, like I started this with that, we all have our niche and our role to play in that. The more each of us can do that, we can allow other people to do that because they see us, you know, allowing for that. It's safe. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to be who you are. You know, it's okay. And we actually celebrate you for it. Mm-hmm. And we see that there's like really beautiful parts of you and there's darkness in you. And I love the darkness and I love the other. And even if you like do something that harms me, I can hold space for that, hold space for the healing, and then hope that you'll offer me the same.
Right. Yeah. Same, I think grace. The beauty of that darkness and light thing is like, I think that it's hard to see that light and to express that light if you have not been open to the darkness as well. And so I think that darkness is a very important piece of many people's journey. And I love what you had to say, how we all, you know, we all might have this tiny, tiny little impact, but if we can embrace who we are and the ways that we can make a change and a difference in this planet for people, then it does make it okay for others. It inspires them to go out and do that, much like you've done for me and so many other of your students, because I know so many people that have gone through your programs and such. So it's really beautiful. I really love hearing this. It's really, really great. Gosh, you have been just such a really, really important teacher in my herbalist path, as I like to say. And I would love to hear just a little bit about, like, how has your journey been? Like, from the start, how did you get there? I know you're an LA boy.
Yeah.
So how did you come to live in the middle of Cascadia and become this powerful plant spirit teacher and guide?
Well, yeah, I was born in Hollywood. not the place that I would have chosen consciously, but apparently there was some machinations afoot that landed me in a place where I felt completely alienated and not welcomed. And it seems like it was the wrong place for me to grow up. But my parents did move away from the city part when I was four. And we ended up in like a suburb of LA. Across the street from my house, there wasn't any houses. It was just hills. So I spent a lot of my childhood roaming around. And I wish I had the story of that. And I, you know, was drawn to the plants and I started making medicine, but I didn't have any of that until.
I don't have that either.
Yeah. Probably. I love when people have that though. And people show up and they're like, oh, I've been making medicine since I was 2 years old and giving herbs. And, oh, that's so cool.
My daughter will have that.
But for me, it started, I mean, I'm like trying to remember where it started. There's five, six, seven things like, oh, that's the beginning. But I guess the one that wants to talk about now is wanting really to be self-sufficient in healing. And I tell a story in my book in the beginning, watching my grandparents die in the hospital and with like tubes and all of that stuff. And I went in there and was just, I didn't have any words for what I was feeling. I just felt like something was really wrong here, to the point where later in life, if I ever had to go to a hospital, into a hospital, thankfully I only had in my adult life, I've only been to a doctor once. Like in this century, I've only been to the doctor once to get a vasectomy.
Yeah. And well, it's nice to be married to a doctor too.
It's nice to be married to a doctor too, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, so I worked at a Portland nursery for a while and I'd have to deliver plants to, there's a beautiful program at those hospitals that I can't remember the name of the woman who started, but she creates these healing gardens, mostly for the children that are in these places with super intense disease processes. And so I'd have to deliver plants there and I would go into the hospital and I would have complete panic attacks. So that just gives you a sense of like how that impacted me. And so after I, you know, became independent in my life, my grandparents died when I was a teenager, I really wanted to learn how to take care of myself without being reliant on the medical system. And at that time, I was absolutely certain that society was going to collapse any day now. And I was praying for it. It's happening finally.
Yep, but here it is.
It seemed like it was going to hold on for a lot longer than it did. So then I just started learning about plants and people would show up in my life. You know, this one guy from Alabama showed up in Portland and my friend met him. And then I started hanging out with him and he had just studied botany in college and he started showing me how to use like botanical keys. So I was starting to ID plants back in the 90s. And then I studied, I went to the herb farm, did their apprenticeship. I studied with Christopher Hobbs. I thought, okay, now I know enough, you know, about this to be an herbalist. And then as soon as I thought I knew enough, it would get turned into this whole other thing until it just kept happening and happening and happening. And then now I'm like, am I an herbalist? I don't know. Is what I do an herbalist? At some level, yeah, I work with plants and people. So.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I think that's part of what I love about herbalism is like, no matter how long and how many different ways in which I study plants and using them as medicine, like I know I'm not going to be an expert for least another 75 years, and I'm 42. So, you know, that's the beauty of it. And I love that so much, because I found myself in the traditional schooling system as a kid. I would get very bored very quickly. Yeah. And I know that's never going to happen in the world of plants. Like, it keeps evolving. And it's, as I come on with students, I talk about how it's kind of an addiction. Like, it's just, but a wonderful, wonderful addiction that you can feel really good about for the most part. So, yeah. Well, that's a great story. It's like, it's an empowering feeling to know that you don't have to rely on Western medicine, but also to know that it's there should you need it for a vasectomy or whatever else you may need. I do a good job of avoiding the doctors as well. And actually, my doctor lives in Corbett, and she was my midwife also when I had my daughter. And anytime I call them, they're just like, you know what to do, Mel. Like, yeah, I guess I do, don't I? And that's just a really, really great feeling to have, you know. I was very, when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was very adamant that it was going to be an all natural pregnancy and all natural labor and all natural everything. And I made it all the way through about 28 hours of labor in the all natural ways. And it was really wonderful. My laboring process was beautiful, but I did get rushed to the hospital for an emergency cesarean. And if I wouldn't have, my daughter and I would be dead. And, you know, I had the best of the best for midwives. So she's not one to be like, yeah, we're just going to get a cesarean. It was definitely an emergency. So I'm grateful for Western medicine in that realm. But even more grateful to have taken the time to continue to learn about using these plants as medicine. And I love that you focus primarily on the wild plants. Are you still doing Cascadia folk medicine?
I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
I love this time of year. It's spring, the sun is shining, and all of our beautiful plant friends are popping up. It's amazing. Unless, of course, you're one of the millions of people who suffer from seasonal allergies. You know, the itchy, watery eyes, the sneezing and wheezing that's straight miserable. Thankfully, there are some amazing herbs that can help you with all of that. Just like the herbs inside of Kick-Ass Allergy from Wish Garden Herbs, one of my absolute favorite herbal companies out there. Kick-Ass Allergy, yes, I said ask without the K at the end. Anyways, this formula has yerba santa, nettles, echinacea for that immune support, and orange peels, all which come together to help dry up those excessive mucosal secretions. Yep, I'm talking about the sniffles and the stuffy nose, the watery eyes, and all that jazz. This blend also acts as a great expectorant and can help ease the swelling and inflammation in those mucosal tissues. It is a top go-to for seasonal allergies. And get this, they combine all those beautiful herbs with glycerin, so it actually tastes pretty darn good. Or should I say, it tastes kick-ass, without the K at the end. Anyways, if allergy season is miserable for you and you want a natural remedy that actually works for those itchy eyes and being all sneezy and wheezy, you have got to check out Wish Garden Herbs Kick-Ass Allergy. And for those of you with the little kiddos, no sweat, they've got a kick-it allergy too. And you pregnant mamas? You don't have to suffer either. They've got a kick-ass allergy formula just for you. So head over to wishgardenherbs.com or check out the link in the show notes and go grab yourself some kick-ass allergy so you can enjoy spring again.
Yes, Cascadia folk medicine still exists despite repeated attempts by me to stop doing it, because it's just just too much stuff to do. And I feel like I don't have enough energy to put into it. But every time I have that thought, people start popping up and saying, oh, blah, 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 blah. I just got some of your medicine and this happened. Or I say, well, I'm thinking about it. And they're like, what? You can't stop Cascadia folk medicine. So it's still alive. And if there's anybody out there who might want to help be a business person that can really help it and nurture it, I'm open to inquiries for sure.
Oh, I feel you on that. I was just going to say, have you thought of having, or I'm sure maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but what about apprentices helping you along?
Yeah, I have.
Maybe finding that golden apprentice that has some good experience in business, which, by the way, as I've learned in business, it's ever evolving, you know, it's just a constant change fest, which is maybe another reason why I like it, because I don't get bored and I love a challenge continuously throughout life. So yeah, I wonder about that. If there's anybody out there or if that's something you would be open to, apprentices. Yes.
I've definitely had amazing people working with me.
Yeah.
And one aspect of it, of like the pressure, I think that people feel sometimes.
Yeah.
Even though I do my best to like quell that feeling of, oh, I can't make medicine as good as you. Mm. It was really hard for me at first to let people help me make the medicine, because I have a very specific way of doing it. And it's imbued with this energetic experience of harvesting and making the medicine. And I started an apprenticeship just to have people help and also to learn that way. And I was so nervous. And right before it started, I had a dream that people were helping me and we were all singing to the plants that we were harvesting, and that the medicine was like exponentially better than it was by me making it by myself. And it was true. When we made the medicine together, it was so awesome to have other people helping in that process. And it did make the medicine better.
That is beautiful, because you're bringing probably more incredibly beautiful energy. I would imagine that you attract some really magnificent people that want to help you. So extra energy. And I completely can relate on that desire to do it all your own in your very own specific way. I'm very much that way. And that's been one of my learning lessons in the past few years. I burnt myself out. I was doing too much and I was trying to do it all on my own and really having no idea how to do business. I just wanted to bring more plants to people. You know, that's all I wanted to do. But it turns out there's a lot more to it than that. And you get to this point when it's your baby that it's hard to accept that somebody else can do some of those things, you know, but I have recently been bringing on part-time people to help me with the production of my teas and my products and to help my brain. Like I've got people that I can now dump my brain into, which is really great. And I have a tendency to be a very ideas oriented person, and I'm always going. And they take a lot of that and say, okay, Mel, let's take that here and find somewhere to focus that energy and those thoughts. And it's proving to be invaluable for me, not only for business, but really personally, because now I'm able to get outside more, which is my church, you know, that's where I must be. And without that, I'm not in a good space mentally or physically or any of those ways. And I wanted to just quickly touch on the apprentice thing. I think it's beautiful that you've brought people on. Over the years, I have had many people ask to come apprentice with me, and I have a very hard time with it myself, because I want to offer them so much for what they're offering me. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. Like, I just want to make sure that they're really getting a great learning experience. And then there's the challenge of like, oh, you've got to train this person on how to do the things, which takes time and can sometimes be worth it, but it takes a lot of energy and a lot of time. And when you're already low on energy and time, that becomes challenging.
Yeah.
I want to just circle back quickly on the Cascadia folk medicine and you saying that it is taking a lot of time and you consider getting rid of it. And you say, if there's anybody out there that wants to help you, can we just go back and talk again? What kind of person would be an ideal person to help you?
Mm. Yes.
Or what areas you would need the help in.
Yeah, someone's very organized. And, you know, the thing for me about making the medicine is that there's a perfectionist tendency that I've really let go of the perfectionism part, but there's still a really careful attention to detail in everything. So that would be part of it. And then the ability to have a deep connection with plants mm-hmm. and to really recognize them as the more than just physical medicines that they are. And then, you know, somebody who's good with computer stuff and all that mixed together would be great.
Awesome. I just wanted to touch base on that in case they're listening to this podcast and they live in the area. Here's a potential opportunity of announcement.
And able to like work on their own, because the truth is, it's not my main business. It's this thing that, like I said, I basically am just bringing it along to provide the community with medicine and provide the School of Forest Medicine with the medicines that we work with for people. So,
Can you talk to me and tell me and my listeners a little bit more about the School of Forest Medicine?
Yes. School of Forest Medicine. I guess the first thing to say is that it's a school that I started, but that I wouldn't say initially I'm the founder. I would say the plants are the founders. There's particular plants for sure that like Devil's Club and Dogwood are two of the main ones that, you know, inspired me to bring this to people. And so I kind of feel like I'm the tender, the steward of this thing that they want to bring to people. And the school has evolved over time. It started as a 9-month initiatory course was the first thing where we went on. There was a couple introductory weekends and a final weekend. And in between, I think there were 6 different trips we'd go on to various places in the Cascadia bioregion to connect with plants and sing and pray together and really just get outside of the confines of society and allow that wildness to come through us. And that was an initiation for me. It was a super intense initiation the first year of getting me to a place where I could actually, and I'm still in that process. Like you said, it might be, you know, my descendants who, whether they're my physical descendants or the people that come after that will really be able to bring forth what really wants to come through. And I'm just doing my best.
Right.
But there was so much that had to be stripped away from me so that I could be present in ways that would allow the teachings of the plants to come through. Now the school is still operating on those same principles, but in the time from when I started the school in 2010, there's been so many things have changed and so many, you know, for me being an herbalist or a facilitator, or if people want to call it a healer, whatever you want to call it, has changed from, you know, really seeing it as helping people, you know, maybe one-on-one to some degree, or in people in groups, to the recognition that we actually can't be healthy unless we have a healthy earth, healthy ecosystems on the earth. So there's this whole bigger thing that's emerged in the last, I'd say, 5 or so years with the school, of this deeper mission of connecting people with ecological intelligence that flows through everything. Like I talked about before, we're sitting in the forest and watching how the forest organizes itself. The plants kept telling me that. They kept saying to me, we can show you how to organize yourselves as humans in the same way that we organize ourselves. And I would be like, whoa, that sounds pretty cool. What does that look like? You know, and I can't necessarily say that I have a document that lists all the ways that we can do that. It feels like it's an ongoing thing that requires it's a real practice to show up in ways that will allow ourselves to be cleared of the things that block that. So, and then to allow the expressions to come forth. I think that probably the best way to kind of describe that, and you touched on this a little bit earlier when you were talking about like giving back to the plants and loving them and all of that, this kind of like these cycles of reciprocity, mm-hmm. which gets again at that, rather than transactional, these relational ways of being. When we open ourselves to receive whatever it is that we need so that we can be who we are, mm-hmm. and we can create allow stories, the stories of who we are, to unfurl, just like the flowers of the most beautiful plant in the world, which is I guess every plant, every flower. But in our uniqueness, we then can't help but allow ourselves to be drawn to the places that need what we have to offer most. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, we create more space to receive what we need. And then it draws more out from us. And I had this thought a ways back that I wrote down, sent out at some point, that said, I'm so grateful to be living in times like this that demand so much of me. And even though it's such a challenging time to live, if we really surrender ourselves to the forces of transformation and change that are here, the capacity there through that, those alignments with those energies, those allies, I mean, talk about never having anything to be bored of, and to be super excited about living is to be participating in this unfolding of these new structures of being that will allow us to live in harmony, that in respect for all the beings on earth is, I mean, I can't imagine anything better. I guess that's the foundation of the School of Forest Medicine.
Ah, that's beautiful.
Wow, what a great chunk of knowledge we just heard. I love learning new things, especially better ways to take care of myself and my family. But if you're like me, I love the knowledge, but I'm often too busy to put it into practice, you know, making my own salves and teas and such. Thank goodness, the lovely folks over at Mountain Mel's are already doing it for me. Their herbal teas support my mind, body, and soul, and they taste great too. And their line of outdoor essential products supports my family's outdoor fun and quickens our recovery afterwards when we overdo it. So hop on over to mountainmels.com and use the code THP15 at checkout to receive a 15% discount, especially for listeners of The Herbalist's Path. That's THP15 for 15% off your order of delicious goodness today.
And as you were speaking, it brought up so many different thoughts and feelings and experiences that I have been on since I've been on this journey as well. And it is really beautiful. And I wanted to just quickly touch on where you were talking about the plants and how they give back and how there is so much to learn from their systems and how they've told you that they can teach you, and you're like, well, there's, you know, I don't have this long exhaustive list, but the beautiful thing is that they have been doing it forever. Yeah. And so that gives us the forever to do it for. And not, I think our society today has unfortunately put these constraints on us and these like false goals of being where you must get there and get there now and do it this way. But really it is an entire way of living and learning and growing and being.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. Yeah. So you still do the immersive program there, right? But a little, obviously it's transformed.
Yeah, I do trips. That used to be a whole course that encompassed all these different trips. And then I started doing them so people could just come to one trip at a time. Nice. And then it's gotten to the point where, because I've been so busy with so many other things, I just do one or two trips a year, and they're about a week long. And I just did one this year, the High Desert Odyssey, that happened in late August and early September. And those are incredible opportunities. I mean, I every year I go, I learn something. I've been going to this particular spot for almost 20 years now and bringing people there for 10. And the land itself in places is imbued with healing energy and knowledge and wisdom that we can then become part of. And remembering, I think one of the most important things of those trips is remembering our deep connection with the living earth and how we can allow that to inform who we are. And then we're doing it in a community of people. And you know, it's like we're forming a little village in that time. And then I also, my longer term course that I have going now is reciprocal illumination.
Yeah.
And we just finished that a couple weeks ago, finished this crazy year's version that had to stretch out and accommodate all right. the COVID stuff. And thankfully, we were able to be outside for a good portion of it. And then we're inside for the last session in masks. And that course, on some level, it's creating a space of mutual learning for how to hold space and what that means for ourselves, for other people, for other beings, for rivers and mountains and forests. And in that, we work with, I think, 18 different plants or 16 throughout the cycle of the year, and do a deep study of the elements and learn about our own traumas and our own gifts that come forth from those traumas as we allow those transformations to happen. And it's super beautiful. I had the experience of, you know, as I always do at the end of a long-term course with a group of students, of just feeling just this deep joy at seeing people who show up, and maybe, you know, people show up in varying levels of understanding of what I'm, you know, trying to present and be a facilitator of. But to see how from the beginning, you know, it's sort of this somewhat disjointed kind of circle that we create. And then by the end, it's this humming, harmonious, you know, it's like, okay, we're starting. And then boom, you can just feel all of the energies coming. And kind of the thing that I think I love the most about that course, they all have the same foundation of learning from the plants.
Right.
And when we bring the plants in and we sit with them and experience their archetypal teachings and energies flowing through our bodies and through the container of the circle, as each person shares their experience, it's like there's this tapestry being woven that I could never myself have learned as much as I know about plants. Right. Without circles like this, I'm deeply indebted to all the people over the years who've sat with me in these circles of like, oh, let's see what these plants have to say to us, see what they have to share with us. And then just seeing that, it's really quite something to watch every time something new comes and the spark of it's something you definitely can't get from reading about a plant in a book.
Right.
And it imprints itself energetically on you, so that if you work with the plant enough, it literally becomes a part of who you are. And that's why it's called reciprocal illumination, because as we learn to know the plant more, we see who we are more. Yeah. It's this kind of like contradictory thing. By kind of offering ourselves to something else, we know ourselves more. And the more we can know ourselves, the more we can actually appreciate and understand what the plant has to offer. It just keeps going and going, and it never ends.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I can, as you speak about it, I can feel that energy that you're talking about in the circle. And I know that I'm not feeling anywhere near that amount of energy that for the people that are physically present within that circle, but I can absolutely feel it through this Zoom call with you. And it's really, really incredibly beautiful. And it makes me say, I need to get back out and go on a journey with Scott again, you know, just to have you as that guy, because I remember, you know, you were in the beginning years of my learning about herbalism and made such a powerful impact. And it would just be such a powerful healing journey to go on another one of at least one of your trips or something. So
it's a whole different level now.
Oh yeah, I bet it is. I'm sure it's been quite a while. So that is really awesome. I want to get a quick, maybe a foundational thing or something from you. I know a lot of the people that listen to this show are very curious about plants in the wild and how to grow plants. And, you know, I know you're very good at growing them. You worked at the Portland Nursery. You definitely do a lot of wildcrafting. And wildcrafting is definitely becoming an issue among people and this beautiful planet. And I was hoping that you could offer some insight and guidelines for people that are just beginning to do these things, and just maybe, you know, touch on the importance of the plants and how to respect them, those kinds of things.
Yes, for sure. Actually, I have like three different books that are burbling through me. Some, you know, have been very strongly burbling through. And one of them is this book about wildcrafting and medicine making. That where I can go more deeply into it than I do in the Pacific Northwest Medicinal Plants book, where it just gets a little section. Yeah. And this book called Relationships of Loving Reciprocity. And I know that, there's a lot of stirrings in the herbal community about the ethical wildcrafting, if that's even possible. And I believe that it is, but that people have to really understand just really basic aspects of doing that, that there's no, like in the old days, they used to say, you know, what's the, you know, oh, you can take 1 in 10 plants. You can't just say that about a living, relational, ecosystemic being. Yeah. You have to really get to know a place. So like spend a lot of time out looking at different types of ecosystems, like ecosystems where from like places that are people barely go to places where there's a lot of interaction between people and plants and the natural ecosystems, and then places where there's a lot of impact by humans, and see the differences, and maybe start in the places where there's been lots of human impact, because there's the plants that show up there, that what they teach us is about how to deal with the devastation. They help repair devastated landscapes. They help us repair those devastated aspects of our cultural selves. And then we can then move into like deeper relationships with the, you know, the plants and more places of wildness. I mean, this could go on for a while. I'll try to be succinct as possible. So that's like a place to start, you know? And so like plants like dandelion and St. John's wort and red root is one also. And yerba santa, like you'd spoken of, that yerba santa that comes only after fire, you know, their seeds need fire to sprout. And then they make these extensive root systems that help stabilize the soil in places that have been burned out. And it has a deep teaching about the regenerative capacity of fire and allowing that to be a part of our lives and our psycho-spiritual architectures. So there's that aspect of it. And then there's voices in the field that say, you know, there's places that we should just not go, that we should just like have like half the earth be set aside for wild nature, right? And if you look more deeply at a lot of those voices, it may not be overt, but the research that I've done, it's like, who are we going to say shouldn't be on their land, right? That we should give back to the earth. Probably not all the people in the United States,
right?
You know, living in our, you know, nice houses and stuff. So there's sort of like it wouldn't be based in justice. I'll just say right. That. And the truth is that humans have never existed in places not in direct connection with the land. And so it's not a matter of us not going out into wild places. It's going out into wild places with the curiosity to learn how we can interact with wild spaces in regenerative ways. And so then I'll just conclude that bit by saying that this regenerative wildcrafting is a very real thing that we can actually. One thing people can do is go out and buy a book or get the book from the library called Keeping It Living. By Nancy Turner and Douglas Duer, the editors. Nice. And it's a specific Northwest book. There's different books for different regions that kind of satisfy that same niche, but it's basically saying, here's when Europeans arrived to this land, they looked around and said, oh, the native people here are just living off the whim of the land. And that was part of the manifest destiny. They're not making use of the land. So we should just come and make use of it in the way we know how, not realizing that there are actually very sophisticated types of, you know, not agriculture, but types of cultivation happening.
Right.
As many, so many people know, like, you know, controlled burns and, mm-hmm. and things like that. But at the root of this, and why that book is called Keeping It Living, is that it's the literal translation of the word for one of the Northwest tribes. Word for wildcrafting literally means keeping it living.
Oh, and so nice.
The idea is that we harvest in such a way that there's more life there than when we started. And so I can use my good friend and teacher, Devil's Club,
as
an example of that, which I know that there's a lot of people saying we should not harvest that plant. And there's I imagine, decent arguments for that, especially here at the southern edge of the range of that plant, where it's much more abundant to the north. But there's still lots of abundance here. And it's also... there, I've seen stands because of the drought conditions that are happening that I've gone past them, you know, in the height of the summer, and they're just dried out and dying. So of course those plants, leave them alone, but places where there's an abundance, if you harvest Devil's Club in the proper way, you can make it so there's more than when you left. Yeah. There's actually a video on my website, if people want to check it out, that I talk about that specifically. with Devil's Club.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, what would you say is the right way to harvest Devil's Club in a fashion that's going to allow it to come back in abundance in the future? Where is your website so that people can find that?
It's forestmedicine.net.
Awesome.
And we will search for the School of Forest Medicine also.
We'll make sure it's linked in the show notes for sure. When I think of Devil's Club, I definitely think of my times learning with you, because we went on a trip in Washington somewhere at one point. It was a very, very rainy weekend. And I remember sitting underneath the leaves of Devil's Club as the rain was pouring down nice and hard. And I still have some photos of those leaves. And it was just a really, really, really cool experience. And now when I walk in the woods around me, I can smell the Devil's Club when it's, you know, 50 feet away from me. I'm like, I am in the presence, you know, and it's just great to have those relationships. So I think that's so important. I wonder if you will be willing to do something here on this show. One thing I always loved about learning with you is your songs. And I don't want to put you on the spot. If you don't want to, we'll edit this out. But if you want to offer a song for the listeners and such, it would be amazing.
I don't need much encouragement to sing a song.
Yay!
I'm always ready to sing a song.
Yay!
The song that's coming is a song of Red Alder. Is it okay if I tell a little story about the song
Please.
Before?
Please. Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. It's beyond okay.
The alder is another one of those plants that can grow in places that have been kind of devastated. I'll just use that word.
Right.
They'll pop up in wet forests that have been clear cut, mm-hmm. and they're considered a weed tree by the forestry, you know.
They're all over the riverbanks by where I live, along with cottonwood.
And the place where we lived before here, where I live now, it was a small piece of land, but portions of it had been logged out. And while we were living there, the alders were just like sprouting up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I remember my neighbor walking by one time, and I was, you know, kind of carefully tending to some of the alders that were growing near the road, and she had cut some of them down so she could get her snow plow through. And I said, you know, please don't cut anything on my land without asking me. And she said, oh, those are just weeds. And I think under the influence of alder, the teachings that alder has taught me, instead of what I might've done in the past, which would have been to be like maybe aggressively kind of like deny what she was saying or like set her straight, I just like took it in and just opened my heart with compassion for her having that, you know, that way of seeing the world. So alder, because it helps regenerate forests, because it's a tree that gathers nitrogen from the air in nodules in its roots and then produces an abundance of leaves that then build up the soil of the forest. And then the wood rots fairly easily. So the trees don't live very long comparatively to other trees, and they grow up and they die, and then they actually prepare the soil for the longer lived trees to come in after. So there's this natural process that they embody in the forest. And they have taught me that we, the people who are alive now, are like the alders. And we basically live in a clear cut culture where we don't have connection with our ancestors. We have lost our connection with the earth. And there's all of us now who are kind of sprouted in this clear cut, and we are providing these soils for the next generations who are coming to then really bring forth these new types of community that are, like I've been talking about, connected with the land. So this song came to me just during the eclipse in 2017, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I was on a trip with a group of people, and this came to me. So I'll sing it now.
I love that story. I'm looking forward to this song. Thank you.
My father is the sun. My father is the mountain. My father is the sun. My father is the mountain. And my mother is the waters of sea and my mother is the waters of the sea. We are the people of the elder. We are the children of the trees. We are the people of the elder. We are the children of the trees. We give and we receive. For the generations that will be, we give and we receive. For the generations that will be, my mother is the moon. She guides and cares for me. My mother is the moon. She guides and cares for me. Oh, my father, please align and protect me. Oh, my father, please align and protect me.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I got to close my eyes the whole time you were singing it and visualize my morning space now. As I said, I'm on the Sandy River and I get to walk along the river and then through this little forested area, and much of the river path is the alders. So I think I'll be singing that song with them tomorrow morning. That's where I go to my church in meditation. So that was really lovely. And I think it is so relevant, that story of us being the alders in our clear-cut society and creating more nurturing ground for the ones that are going to grow into those spaces. That is so relevant today. And maybe that's a piece of what is happening in our society right now. Yeah. I think that's quite incredible. Yes. You have your songs available, don't you? Or song books, I believe. I saw that a couple of years ago. I was looking into your school again. And yeah, can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, there's the songbook is available for purchase on the website. It's pretty thick by this time. It's,
I bet,
songs that I've received and also songs of people who've been part of the school. And then on the website, there's a page of plant songs that you can connect in, and then that will lead you to like a SoundCloud site. You can also do SoundCloud/forestmedicine and get to it that way.
That is awesome. Yeah. I need to tune in. That felt really good to hear. So again, I thank you.
Yeah. And along those lines, there's, because I love the intersections of plants and songs and dance that people have done. And then I recently finished working on a book project with a friend of mine who's an incredible photographer. Her name's Holly Wilmeth, and she did these pictures of people adorned with a certain plant. So like I got to be in the book, and I'm Devil's Club.
Nice.
And so had, you know, Devil's Club leaves stuck to the side of my face with the spine sticking in, and I made a crown out of the stalks on my head.
Nice.
An amazing experience and beautiful. And she did this with like a bunch of different plants from the Northwest.
Cool.
And alder was one of them. And so I wrote something for them. It would be okay if I read the thing I wrote. It's short, I think.
Please. I love it.
Just to kind of go along with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So this is sort of like an aspect of the archetypal teachings of alder that I've learned from connecting with them.
Nice.
So much of the discord in our world, from the degradation of ecosystems to conflicts between nations and cultural groups, to the small-scale disrespect inflicted upon human and non-human beings every moment of every day, results from the unhealed societal and personal wounds and traumas. tracing the trajectories of these past sufferings, we may find a common source, separate self-shame. Shame severs our empathetic and relational connections, and every act of separation begets further acts of separation, inviting us to acknowledge and directly experience the mutuality of our existence. Red Alder illuminates pathways of interconnected awareness and reciprocal respect. As we remember that we are each a node within an interwoven web of reciprocity, we shift from self and human-centered to community and earth-centered orientations. With Alder's assistance, we can regenerate the toxic and degraded soils of our relational lives, converting disconnect, unhealthy conflict, and exclusion into fertile inclusionary ground from which all beings may flourish and thrive.
That is great. I love that. that is really wonderful. It's really going to take a whole nother level to my morning meditation stations amongst the alders on the river. And it's such an important thing right now too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's magnificent. Thank you so much. Yeah. We're getting to that time where I should maybe ask you where else people can find you. I know they can find you at forestmedicine.net. Yeah. Where else can they find you? Do you have, are you like YouTube or social media or any of that crazy stuff?
Yeah, I do. There's cascadiafolkmedicine.com if people want to get tinctures.
Yeah.
And then there's, I'm on Instagram at forestmedicine. That's probably the place where I interact the most social media wise. I don't really like Facebook so much.
Why? Just because it's evil and gross and disgusting? No, sorry.
there's a lot of that. Yes. I mean, I've had my business coach was like, yes, it's like that, but all the more reason to bring the light that you have to offer there. And I'll do it on Instagram.
Right.
And then if people want to like, nobody really follows me on Twitter, but I have a whole thing going on there that, that's at Scott_Close, KLOOS. That is where I kind of just like, just say more stuff. It's interesting that most of the people I know and I think the planet people aren't on Twitter because there's this image of Twitter, but there's actually really cool ecosystems of ecology people and climate change people and just real people that are really deeply investigating what the new ways of being will be like. So I have this sort of like little cultivated arena there that I participate in, and people might want to check that out.
That you just for the first time made Twitter sound appealing to me.
and it's also a cesspool, and thankfully I don't like interact with that portion of it.
Yeah, we were just having a discussion earlier today actually with the woman who's going to edit this podcast for me, and she's going to be so excited because she is a musician and really loves learning about the plants too, so she's going to enjoy editing this. But we were just talking about, she's on Facebook and how everybody is talking, oh, everything's so horrible on Facebook. And she's like, all I got is kittens and banjos and like, you know, one other thing that she loves, but how you gotta like go to the things you want to know about, much like you were just saying on Twitter. So
you gotta cultivate it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, thank you so much again for being on here. It's been really, really nice. I am dead serious when I say I need to get out on a trip with you. I'm not sure when I'm going to do it, but I look forward to that moment. And I really hope that some of my listeners here get the chance to go on a trip with you and learn from you and take advantage of all that you have to help the plants offer to those people. Mm-hmm. Because it's really a beautiful and powerful experience.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You're a great guide.
Yeah, can I just say a few more things about if you go onto the website, you can sign up for the mailing list, which will then, you know, you'll get all the updates of the classes that are happening. And right now, by the time this comes out, it'll have already started, but I'm in the second phase of this Botanical Allies for Becoming Better Humans, which is kind of like the entryway into the School of Forest Medicine ecosystem. And people can sign up for it after it starts too.
Okay, great.
And then just because it's all going to be recorded. So it's all on Zoom. And then the third one is coming in January. So I decided I wanted to have things for people to do, especially during these COVID times and in the winter time. Yeah. When we can't be outside with the plants, we can at least be inside. That's happening. And then I'm going to start taking applications for reciprocal illumination soon I'm going to get the dates down for next year. There's also this ecological intelligence mentorship that I've been doing.
Yeah. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it's been one of the most rewarding things I've been a part of. It. I learn so much every time I work with someone, but it's a one-on-one mentorship, 6 months of just going really deep. And what happens in those sessions is that we cultivate, and like you were saying, you could feel through the online medium, I was really surprised how well it translates doing like one-on-one sessions over Zoom.
Yeah,
we kind of create a field together, an opening to where we can really be connected with those cycles of reciprocal giving and receiving, like I was talking about, to see what, like the basic question we're asking is, who am I and what am I here to do? You know, the best way I found to answer that question is not with the mind, but by opening up to these greater forces that flow through everything and finding those places where our medicine is needed. And then what resources can flow towards us to help us find those things. So it's amazing. Almost every time when I'm done with a session, the people I'm working with, we're kind of like, wow, that was really cool.
Yeah, I bet. That sounds really incredible. I think that's one of the greatest things about being a teacher now that I'm teaching more too, which I was doing in my community for a long time, but I'm starting to do it online now. And well, one of the most beautiful things about being a teacher is how much you get to learn in the process of being the teacher. But as you talked about that last, tell me the name of that mentorship again.
Ecological Intelligence Mentorship.
Thank you. As you talked about that and the who am I and what am I here to do, it made me think of a really important story and message that I have received from, I believe, somebody who's been one of your teachers as well, but has been a very powerful and impactful teacher in my world. And I just kind of wanted to share this story with you, if that's okay. I've shared it on my podcast a few times, but before I came to Elderberry School with you as a teacher, I went out to the Brighton Bush Herbal Conference. And I had been dabbling in books and taking an online course or two. And I decided to, on a whim, go to that conference. And it was a year when like Rosemary Gladstar and Christopher Hobbs and Tim Blakely and Jane Bothwell and Cascade Anderson Geller were there. Mm-hmm. And I went on a plant walk with Cascade. Mm-hmm. And she was very, very wonderful at teaching about how to really pay attention to your surroundings and the plants near you. And, you know, maybe you're going to try and gather this one plant, but what do the other plants in the area look like? And, you know, just being really in tune with those kinds of things, having this complete awareness. And it was great. And I left, and I left that conference, and I was like, that's it. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to go study herbalism. And I went and signed up for school with you and carry on. A few years later, I was going to the Portland School of Traditional Western Herbalism, and I was pregnant with my daughter, and you were a teacher in this program again, and we got some of the best, in my opinion, teachers to come in and teach every month, and Cascade was supposed to be coming the next month, and I was so excited to see her again and just let her know about what I'd been up to, and she died on Herb Day, May 4th, 2013. And for the next 2 weeks, the first night of her death and almost 2 weeks after, she came to me in my dreams and she would look at me straight in the eyes and she would say, "You have what it takes. You have the voice. You have the power to shout it from the mountaintops and the treetops about the importance of using plants as medicine. You have to do it for the people. You have to do it for the plants. And you have to do it for the planet." Mm. And she was so direct to me, Scott. She was like looking me so straight in the eyes. And I was like, wow, I'm having some intense pregnancy dreams because I didn't believe that people came to you in your dreams. Mm. And boy, howdy, did she ever. And it was really powerful. And that's much of why I'm doing this podcast, because I do have a voice and that is one of my gifts. And I have this energy to share with people. And I truly believe that the more people we have using plants as medicine, the more chance we have to make this world a better place, not just for us greedy humans, but for the actual earth and universe beyond. And so that kept happening for almost 2 weeks straight. And she was so clear. And I'd wake up every morning telling my partner, like, oh my gosh, I'm getting these really powerful messages, you know? And then I, you know, keep in mind I was pregnant with my daughter and I wanted to get a Mayan abdominal massage. So I called your wife, Catherine, and she was busy. And she says, no, you know, I'm really busy. So why don't you go over to Hood River? And I said, okay, I'll go to Hood River. And she sends me there and I went to see Keith Silva and we first saw each other and we're like, gosh, you look so familiar. And we couldn't figure out why. Then we made the connection that we were on those plant walks together at Brighton Bush several years before and we had really connected. And she at this time was looking to move to Oregon, but needed sun. And so ended up in Hood River. And so then we started talking about you and she had been learning with you and like all these other ways we started herb nerding out and it was just beautiful. And then she told me how she lived with the Mayans for so long and studied with them and that they believe that the spirit lives on for 9 days after death to go share their messages with the people that they need to have hear them. And that's about how long Cascade was coming to me so directly. And in the beginnings of Mountain Mel's, I would walk in the forest and I'd go through the hard times of running a business, which there are many, right? Mm-hmm. And some days I'd be like, why the heck am I doing this? And I would go walk in the forest and I would connect with where I am and I would reconnect with those messages from Cascade. And it fueled me, you know? I was like, she's right. She's right. I do have this gift and it's my duty to share it, right? And then and then I lost touch with that for a few years. And I went through 3 years of my hardest time of life. And I've been coming out of them for a little over a year now. And it's been a really powerful healing experience, which is part of why I also want to go on one of these journeys with you again, just to reconnect and have that like, I mean, I'm so fortunate that I do live where I live and I can tune in to the powers of the earth and the energy. And I'm really blessed in that way. But what you have to bring is even more powerful guidance in that way. And yeah, anyways, I had to share that story with you.
Yeah. Wow. Can I just piggyback on that a little bit?
Yeah.
The first, I just say, thank you for heeding that call.
Yeah, and I have really, to.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same for me. I tried not to listen to those calls and
me too. It hurts.
Way too difficult.
Yeah.
But then life got even more difficult when I started to listen to them. Mm. And now it's much easier.
It's a fun roller coaster.
Yeah. So Cascade, a friend of mine was studying with her. I never got to study with her, but a friend of mine was studying with her and she offered a plant walk that the people in the class could bring a friend. So my friend brought me on the plant walk and Cascade kept asking questions. I'd been studying herbs for a little while and I'd already done the herb farm apprenticeship and studied with Christopher Hobbs and she kept asking questions and no one was raising their hand. So I just go and answer the question. And I kind of felt bad that I was answering all the questions. And then she turned to me and she said, you know, you should start teaching about herbs. And I was like, huh? No way. Yeah. You know, instantly like, no.
Right. Not me. I'm not good enough for that.
Yeah. It really stuck with me, but it took several plants to say, you know, I think the last plant that said it was nettles. I'd come back from a trip somewhere and came in the spring and went to harvest nettles and there were people walking past me and I was trying to hide. I didn't want them to see me, but people kept saying, you know, what are you doing? And I didn't want to share with them.
Right.
I felt self-conscious. And then the nettle said, you need to tell people about me. Mm-hmm. And you need to start teaching people about plants. And I was like, oh no. And then the next people came and I shared with them and they were so excited that they learned this thing about nettles. And then that really started it for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's cool that Cascade has played that role for so many people, I imagine. And I imagine she still continues to play that role.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like she's still very much in my pocket, so to speak, as a very powerful teacher, even though her physical body is not here. And when I share this story with other herbalists, so many come back with another great story of her. And I just found it so interesting that she came to me with those messages, but I had only been on that one walk with her several years earlier, but I believe her message.
Yeah,
it's great to take that with me now and to get over the fears, because it's scary when you're like, oh, I'm like her telling you to go teach about herbalism. Yeah. It gets scary because it is that vast world of like, there's always so much to learn. And there's always that person that maybe knows more than you or something like that. It's this thing, I think, ingrained in many different areas of our society, of the imposter syndrome or what have you. Like, who are you to teach this? I'm like, wait a second. I've been doing this for at least over a decade, so I could teach somebody something, you know? Oh,
gotta be something.
but it also, yeah, it feels great to be able to offer that to people as well. So
definitely.
Thank you so much. I look forward to the next time I get to sign up for one of your trips.
Oh, I would love that. It would be so much fun.
I would love it too. I know I would get so much benefit far beyond just that time there, you know? Mm-hmm. That's some soul soothing goodness for sure. I thank you so much for coming on the show, and I can't wait to share this with other people listening to The Herbalist Path.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I super appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. I hope people that are listening really get the opportunity to come learn with you.
Cool. And it's great to see you.
Yeah, you too. Even if it is virtually, tell your family hello for me. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye. Bye.
This has been The Herbalist's Path, where we're on a mission to inspire an herbalist in every home. Again. Thanks so much for joining us. If you'd like to support our mission, please subscribe, rate, and review to help others find us. Together, we can make herbalism #spread like wildflowers. Wishing you all a lovely day. Bye for now.